I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. We've been Disney fans our entire lives. And now, as childless adults, we're undertaking a journey through the media that shaped our lives.
Trying to find out if what made them special is still there.
We are Rewatching the Magic.
Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
We have some news that we really need to talk about before we get into the main feature here. Kiki, you want to run through that news story that came out like earlier today or yesterday?
Yeah, let's start with the dark but important news, yeah. I guess. Disney just announced yesterday, I think it was as we're recording this, that they're going to lay off about 28,000 people between the various parks.
Yeah, with Disneyland California not opening up anytime soon, and the other parks and outside of the country still working at a reduced capacity, even though Florida has now opened up their state to be full capacity, I can't see Disney going back to full capacity anytime soon. Yeah.
Well, they won't if they're, you know, smart and want to avoid all of the lawsuits.
Yeah.
It's
terrible, but yeah, this is something I think a lot of people saw coming, and hoping that wasn't going to be the case, but here we are.
Yeah, I think it angers me more when it's a large corporation like this.
Especially, yeah, Disney has all of the money in the world and can afford to keep pretty much all of their employees on some sort of furlough payment.
Yeah, it really annoys me when it is like a huge corporation like this. I feel really bad if somebody's been working for a small company and all of the savings dried up, you know? Mm-hmm. But you could probably dock one of the executive members' salary for like a year and pay people to just stay home, you know?
Yeah, that's what Iger did the first few months of the pandemic. His last few months as CEO, to be exact, before he passed it on to Chapek. And
yeah.
I assume this is all on Chapek because he is the boss.
Well, I will tell you who actually has come out agreeing with us is Abigail Disney. She said, and I am quoting Abigail Disney here, who, if you don't know Abigail Disney, she is the granddaughter of Roy Disney. Quote, "If Disney had spent more time in Governor Newsom's office arguing for an extension of unemployment benefits and more rent subsidies instead of for opening the parks prematurely and in a way that would risk their employees' health, I'd be a lot more comfortable with the loyalty to which they lay claim. If Disney had not spent down every penny of its cash on share buybacks in 2019, $11.5 billion worth, perhaps there'd have been some dough on hand to ensure that even at a partial level, they could continue to keep some of these workers on until things return to normal," end quote.
And who knows when things are going to go back to normal?
I will say that from what I've been able to tell right now, the layoffs are unfortunately starting with non-union and part-time workers. Fortunately, the Disney parks have a pretty strong unions that work there. I know the ones at the Disneyland parks are especially pretty good and pretty active. I do believe that the Florida park also has some union representation. So hopefully the unions can crack down and protect their members from any further layoffs, but we'll have to see. So moving on from the unfortunate news, and all our love to anybody who's currently employed by Disney and maybe worried about that, our hearts are with you. We did have another little bit of Disney news, which is that Disney Plus has announced a new feature.
That is the group watch feature. So if, because of, again, the pandemic, a lot of people are not able to get together like they used to. I mean, a lot of people, they get together, they watch movies or they watch sports or they watch whatever. Can't really do that right now, or at least you shouldn't be doing that right now. So Disney Plus has implemented the group watch feature in that you can, with your own Disney Plus account, when you start a movie or a show or whatever, you can invite other people on their Disney Plus accounts to watch with you in a big group watch. I believe other some of the video games, like Xbox and PlayStation, has similar things with their gaming and their movies. I think Netflix might have had something similar. But yeah, if you have Disney Plus and like other friends and family have Disney Plus and you want to have a group watch along, you can invite them and you can have a big group watch along, and everyone in the group can pause and fast forward and rewind the movie. That's going to cause some chaos, I know. Unfortunately, there's no chat feature. Excuse me. There's no chat feature with this new group feature. But they do have emojis, so anyone who is watching the movie can use their emojis to either express enjoyment or disappointment in whatever they're watching.
And I know a lot of people are thinking, what about Mulan? Because right now we are still in the period of time where Mulan is restricted to premium access. Any account that goes into a group watch party for Mulan right now will also need to have paid for premium access. So you guys just have to, so you know.
So if you don't want to pay it, wait for December, is what it is.
Yeah, it's not going to be that long before it'll just be, you know, out there on regular Disney Plus. So, you know, do it around Christmas time. Mm-hmm. Holiday watching if you want, get all the family together and what have you. So I think that's about all we can say about that.
Honestly, at this point, get the family on Discord and you can do the voice chat that way while you're watching.
Yeah, I'm sure that they'll probably add new features depending on what people say as they're playing around with it. Mm-hmm. At the first, but I do kind of feel for Disney because people are watching Disney Plus on a variety of different technologies. You know, some people will watch it on their phone, some people will watch it on a smart TV, some people will do it through something like a Fire Stick or Chromecast.
Some people will
watch it through their video game system. There might be an issue trying to integrate all those technologies together in voice or typing chat room kind of features. Yeah. So I do kind of feel for the tech people trying to make that work. So
if you work in Disney IT, hats off to you.
Yeah. And honestly, if you are an IT person that worked on the construction of the Disney Plus software, bravo to you, because I have had almost no problem with Disney Plus the entire time I've had it.
Yeah.
It's been what, almost a year now since it launched?
It'll be a year next month.
And we have had, there were some server problems at launch where they just couldn't handle the traffic. Mm-hmm. But other than that, every glitch I've ever had on Disney Plus has basically come down to my ISP is the worst ISP on the history of the planet. So I'm really impressed at how well the rollout went. So bravo to them for that.
Yep. So is that all the news we have?
Yep. I think that's it for Disney news. Let's get into our theme month for October.
Yes, because it is spooky season. Ooh. It's October. It's, you know, get your pumpkin spice, get your jack-o'-lanterns, put on your costumes, and stay inside with a big bowl of candy. Because, yeah, that's how going to be Halloween this year.
Yeah. Please stay inside. please, I would like to leave my house at some point in the near future. I'm begging you, please stay inside.
Yes. Kiki is a high risk person health wise, so please do it for Kiki. If no one else,
I have not left my house since MarsCon. I'm not even joking. I've left my house for like a doctor's appointment every, you know, 2 months or something. But that I've even I'm not this antisocial. So, I want to see the sky again.
We're doing movies that have something to do with spookiness. So we are going to be watching, we're going to be talking about a movie that scared the hell out of us when we were kids. And kind of was designed to. That would
be... This is every millennial's nightmare.
Nightmare fuel,
Can be traced back to this film, I think.
Yeah, if you were a millennial... If you were an 80s kid, this was the source of your nightmares. Considering, let's just get into it. This is Return to Oz, the Wizard of Oz sequel made by Disney, even though they never made the original Wizard of Oz. It's odd.
Yeah, and I'm gonna, let's go ahead and kind of pop this bubble right now. This is... Yes, based on the Oz books, yes, it is very different, but even though they say it is not based on the 1939 Judy Garland Wizard of Oz, it is. It very obviously is. When you're watching
Ruby
this
Slippers
film,
alone.
Yeah, they had to pay MGM quite a hefty fee to use the idea of the ruby slippers, because that's not from the books.
No, in the books it was silver slippers.
Yeah, and
they changed it. They changed it to ruby because it would look better in color.
Yeah, silver doesn't translate very well on screen in some color processes. So,
especially in the 1930s.
Yeah, especially then. So, so Disney paid, and apparently through the nose, if what I've read is correct, for the use of the concept of the ruby slippers. They designed their own, of course. They weren't using, like, the original Judy Garland ruby slippers, but just to use that idea cost them a lot of money for this movie. And there is some stuff in the portrayal of Dorothy.
Well, Dorothy being having brown hair in the books, Dorothy is a blonde.
Yeah, but also in the way that Furzebulk kind of portrays her, there's a little bit of
Judy Garland twang
her speech.
Yeah, that... you don't understand the way she talks. There is very much she's trying to invoke Judy Garland's speech pattern.
Yeah, and that is not the way she speaks normally, so it's very obvious that she was being coached that way by the director. So that they are trying to tie it in together. The other thing is that in the books, Oz is a very physical place that Dorothy goes. She goes to Oz, she returns physically to Kansas. In the movie, of course, the original film, what they did was they made it a dream, sort of.
Yeah.
You know, there's questions on exactly did she go anywhere? And the same is true for this movie. You can write this entire movie off as a dream that she has after being bonked on the head or something.
Electroshock to the head.
Well, she never actually gets that.
I have theories. When we get to that point of the movie, I have theories about this movie.
I'm interested in hearing theories. But let's go ahead and do this properly.
There is
you want to talk
of
a little bit about the backstory of how we ended up here?
This is a movie that goes all the way back to 1937. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs comes out, and it is a big hit. So Disney, Walt Disney, the man, wants to do a follow-up. Now, we know in real life that the follow-up was Pinocchio, and it was a great movie. But the original idea of the follow-up was going to be The Wizard of Oz. Now, can you imagine Walt Disney, instead of doing Pinocchio, doing The Wizard of Oz? We'll never know. Because MGM beat him to the punch, getting the rights. And they would eventually release their movie in 1939. The movie everybody knows. Honestly, when you say The Wizard of Oz, everyone, baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, Xennials, will all think of Judy Garland as Dorothy. That's just it. And that is such a big part of the iconic, how iconic that movie is. But Disney would not, he would not say no. He would not say no to this idea of an Oz movie. And in the 1950s, petty, vindictive, you decide, secure the rights to the next 10 Oz books. Books 2 through 11 to make sure that only he had the rights to do an Oz movie. Again, petty, vindictive, determination, you be the judge. So we get to 1957, and Disney announces originally it was going to be a TV special on the Disneyland show, two parts, called The Rainbow Road to Oz. And eventually, Disney really likes this idea to the point where it's not going to be a TV special. It's going to be the first Disney live-action movie musical. Wow. Again, a live-action musical Oz movie from Disney in 1960. Again, that doesn't happen. To prepare for this idea, he does a segment on the Disneyland show with the Mouseketeers, because the Mouseketeers were going to star in this movie. The Mickey Mouse Club was very popular. The show was winding down. So he wanted to do something with the Mouseketeer actors to kind of give them this big boost. And the idea of doing this as an Oz film worked for him. Again, you can see this 10-minute segment on YouTube. Just Google Walt Disney's Wizard of Oz, and you can see what the idea of this movie was going to be. The Rainbow Road to Oz. The storyline of The Rainbow Road to Oz was going to be Dorothy comes back to Oz and finds that the Cowardly Lion has taken over all of Oz and is now a bad guy. But obviously he's under the spell of an evil wizard. So Dorothy and the Scarecrow and introducing the Patchwork Girl and other Oz characters from the sequels would find the evil wizard, defeat him, bring the Cowardly Lion back to the nice person he once was, and everything is saved, and everybody sings.
Of course everybody sings.
Because, yeah, it's Disney, it's musical.
Yeah.
Disney didn't like the way that segment turned out, and he really didn't like any of the scripts that were given to him. Ultimately, the entire Oz project was scrapped, and in turn, Disney went with the idea of a new adaptation of Babes in Toyland. Yep, instead of Babes in Toyland, we could have had Oz. Now, Babes in Toyland is still a good movie, at least to me. So imagine what Oz could have been like in that place. Annette Funicello was set to play Ozma in Rainbow Road to Oz, which, again, that actually would have been good, but again, we'll never know. And he was so, but he still wanted to do something else. He even attempted to do a Oz ride at Disneyland. The first attempt was going to be an expansion of the Storybook Land River Ride, where you return and go into, after seeing all of the houses of all the characters, you return and go into Candy Mountain, which would transport you to Oz and see all the Oz characters. And just based on what this was described as, the description of this ride, this sounds a lot the way it was. You go into this area, you go to all the different lands of Oz and meet all these characters. It sounds a lot like this was a proto version of It's a Small World, at least to me, because it was all going to be a boat ride. But then, you know, the World's Fair happened, and he had to make it about kids around the world. But just
with
to think
the of, most annoying song in the history of ever.
But just imagine, again, I have no proof of this. This is just my own assumption based on everything that we know about this Candy Mountain ride. But just imagine, instead of It's a Small World, we had Candy Mountain, and you went and you saw all the characters from the Oz books. I know you would have.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Again, we wouldn't have It's a Small World after all.
But I am okay with that trade.
So again, unfortunately, Disney died before his attempt at a Disney movie ever got made. And none of these projects ever happened, unfortunately, which brings us to the 80s. And a movie editor named Walter Murch, who wanted to do his first ever feature film.
Yeah, I will say that Walter Murch had a career already that was pretty interesting as far as film history goes. He worked on all three Godfather films, Apocalypse Now, but more important for this particular film, he had worked on George Lucas's first couple of films, THX 1138 and American Graffiti.
Didn't he work on the original Star Wars at some point?
I am not sure, but it is possible.
Mm. Yeah, and the fact that he worked with Lucas had Lucas kind of backing him up for this project.
I do not see Star Wars on his resume, so.
Okay, so anyway, Lucas kind of backed this guy up for Disney, even saying, if Murch isn't up to snuff for what you want him to do, I'll do it. So imagine, we could have had a Wizard of Oz movie directed by George Lucas.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's a good thing, having seen the prequels.
Yeah.
But
this was 1980. Again, Jedi and Empire hadn't come out yet, so who knows?
I will say that walking into Disney and having the guts to say, hello, Disney Studios, I would like to produce the Oz film you've never been able to make in your entire run as a studio. And here are my good friends, George Lucas and Francis Ford Coppola, to back me up on that.
Yeah.
Because Coppola did also kind of go to the mat for him and was like, I can vouch for this guy. He'll turn out a good, solid movie. So that had to have been quite an interesting thing.
Yeah.
There are a few points in movie history where I would have just loved to have been in the room where it happened, so to speak, to borrow mm-hmm. from another Disney Plus thing there. But this is kind of one of them. Like, I want this guy to come in and be like, well, primarily I'm an editor, but I want to do what Walt couldn't. And here are my good friends to back me up. Yeah. I don't know. It seems like such a weird sequence of events. But Disney went for it because of the old thing that we're going to see a bunch in film history, which is that their license was about to expire. And if they didn't make a movie, they were going to have to either repurchase the rights or sell them to somebody else.
Yeah, and that's how we got a couple of Fantastic Four and Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, pretty much all of them.
Yeah, so, yeah, here we are. And Murch's idea of Oz, at least as it was explained, as I understand it, was to be more faithful to the books rather than at least more faithful to the books than the 1939 movie was. And I'm not saying it's not, but there's a reason why the 39 movie took the tone that it did rather than being directly what the tone of the books were.
Yeah, I will say that when I was a kid and first watching this movie, because I saw this movie fairly young. It was on TV a lot in the weird hours, you know. And so I watched it quite regularly. I always thought that somebody just decided to throw a bunch of nightmare fuel into something and call it Oz. You know, like one of those in name only kind of things. And then I actually read a bunch of the Oz books when I was a kid after having seen this movie. And I realized, like, oh no, this nightmare fuel is straight from the books.
Even the way the characters look is very similar to the artwork in those books.
Yeah, this is, you know, if you're talking about, like, who in the world would put, like, a witch that just has a bunch of heads in cabinets in a children's book? Like, well, there's your L. Frank Baum for you, because this is pretty much his invention. I always thought that they maybe couldn't get the, you know, until the end of the movie, I was like, so they couldn't get the rights to the scarecrow, so they just made a pumpkin scarecrow. And all, but apparently, you know, Jack Pumpkinhead is in the books. You know, Mombi is in the books. The, you know, although
Mombi is a very different character in the books than she is in this version.
Yeah, they mix Mombi with a princess. I forget what the princess is.
Languidier.
Languidier, yeah. And so it was Languidier that had all the heads and Mombi that had all the magic. So they kind of shoved those two together to create the Princess Mombi that we see in the movie. TikTok is from the books.
From the books.
Yeah, so pretty much all of the stuff that you watch this movie and go, what in the world were they thinking? It was in the books. And
although I will say that Ozma is a more interesting character in the books than she is in this movie.
Well, she has about two lines in this movie, so it's kind of difficult to make her a interesting character.
Although
with that.
The story of I don't know if you could do the story of Ozma as the books tell it without angering somebody. Spoiler for a 100-year-old book, Ozma, for the most part of her first story, is a boy. So, yeah, it's a boy named Tip, and then at the end of the book, Tip is revealed to be Ozma, so it turns from a boy into a girl. That's gonna anger someone.
I don't know. I honestly think that would be down to how you did it. I think there are ways to do it. I'm not sure that most of Hollywood has the kind of sensitivity to be able to do that where it wouldn't come off awful in some way.
Yeah, but I can see his general audience saying, how can you make this political? And it's like, read the book and you'll understand. And even then, it's like, most people only know the 1939 movie and that's it. And they haven't read any of the books.
Yeah. I like I said, I read most of the books. I didn't make it through the entire series, but I made it through a bunch of them. And they made such a small impression on me that I don't really remember them. I'm not, as a child, I found them kind of bland. Personally, I don't know how I would take it if I went back and read them as an adult, but they really made almost no impact upon my childhood other than I read that. Anyway, so let's that's more than enough about background, I think, but let's do a couple of cast things really quick, because they're I'm not gonna go through everybody, but this is a relatively small cast. But the biggest one that we got to talk about is, this is the debut film of Miss Firouzeh Balk. And we stand a legend around here. I think we're both kind of huge fans. I know I am.
Yeah. The Craft, American History X.
Almost Famous.
Yeah.
I got to tell, this Return to Oz The Craft and Almost Famous were like a trifecta of films in my childhood and teenage years that really had an impact on me as a person. The Craft probably the most of the three. You know, when you're like a weird little goth kid, I think that's kind of like if you were a weird little goth kid in the 90s, I think that was kind of a demand that you had to be super into The Craft, to the point where some of my friends for a very long time would jokingly refer to me as Nancy, which is Fareeza Balk's character in that movie. So there was a time in my life where that was one of my nicknames. But this is her first film. She's playing a much younger Dorothy than Judy Garland did.
Yeah, Judy Garland was 17 when she did Oz. I believe the character was supposed to be young, somewhat slightly younger than that.
And yeah, Fareeza but Balk she here. Was definitely supposed to be a teenager. But I think Fareeza Balk was like
10.
9 or something when she got the... I think she was like 9 or 10 when they filmed it. So, yeah, she is very definitely a younger Dorothy.
So, like, 39, Dorothy is supposed to be, like, 12, and this is supposed to be, like, 8 or 9.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how it works out, but the thing is that even though it's technically not supposed to be a sequel to that movie, it's desperately trying to be a sequel to that movie. So it's hard not to compare them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know, I've mentioned my feeling on child actors before, and while, of course... I don't think anybody is as good an actor as they will ever be at 9. She was pretty good in this. I was really surprised at how not grating her performance was. That it was actually an enjoyable performance, and I find that very difficult when dealing with child actors. As our kind of main big bad... We've got Nicol Williamson, who was a British actor of quite some renown, more on the stage, really. But he was really known as like an actor's actor, and was... was known as being the kind of favorite of certain playwrights. Samuel Beckett, especially, was always wanted him in plays and stuff like that. But not as much a film actor that people of our generation really knew. He was kind of famously Sherlock Holmes in the movie The 7% Solution, which if you're a big Sherlock Holmes fan is a big one in the fandom. He also was in The Exorcist 3. interestingly, his final film appearance was in Spawn. The comic book film Spawn. So he had a very interesting and varied career on stage and on screen. A little bit of voice acting and stuff in there as well, but This is a big one that people of our generation would know him from. We've got Jean Marsh back again. We talked about her. She was our evil witch in Willow, mm-hmm. and she's back as the evil witch in this one as well. She plays, Princess Mombi, and the of course everybody like in the Judy Garland movie. Most of the cast does dual roles. Playing somebody in the real world and somebody in Oz. Nicol Williamson and Jean Marsh are also the doctor and nurse in the psych ward that Dorothy gets sent to. We've got Piper Laurie as Aunt Em, and this is one I had forgotten about that she was even in this movie. Piper Laurie is probably best known to our generation as the mom in Carrie.
They're all gonna laugh at you.
Yeah, I kind of kept waiting for her to like grab Dorothy and be like, "Don't talk about Oz, they'll all laugh at you."
That's what she sent it to the psych ward.
Yeah, and so basically just don't let Piper Laurie play a mom figure, I think is probably what we learned from this. She was also in, you know, Twin Peaks and Children of a Lesser God. She's a great career. But I think somewhere in the back of everybody's mind, she's always going to be the mom from Carrie. That's kind of the big ones for the live action actors that you know. But this is our second Brian Henson film in a row.
Yep.
A lot of puppetry in this movie. However, not really connected with the Henson Company or Muppet Builders. I can't really find that any of the puppeteering in this had any connection other than Brian Henson. I could be wrong on that, and I'm willing to be corrected. If you know differently, please let me know. But this seems to be a completely different...
Independent from all that.
Yeah. Brian Henson is in this as Jack Pumpkinhead, both the voice and the puppeteer. The puppeteer,
yep.
Interestingly, we also have Deep Roy.
Yep.
Who, I'm not, have we talked about Deep Roy before on the...
I don't think so, but most people might know him as the Oompa Loompas in the Johnny Depp Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie.
Yeah, that's probably his biggest where you can actually see his face. But he is, one of those actors that kind of, shows up. He was in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek films. He's the, alien that follows Scotty around. And he also played Teeny Weeny in Neverending Story. So, you know, he's got a good
80s kids movies that give you nightmare fuel.
Yeah. He's, you know, he shows up in a lot of different things.
He is playing the Tin Man in this movie.
Yeah, Tin Man doesn't get a lot of screen time.
No
lines. Not a lot of screen time. As far as people that we would kind of recognize, I think that's kind of it for most of the cast. A lot of assorted puppeteers and other performers.
Let's get into this Nightmare Field movie.
I am going to have to say that, you know, sometimes we go through and we do kind of the plot beats and everything. And I want to say that when we were talking about doing this movie, I wanted to do the movie, but I thought, you know, I can remember scenes from this film. I can remember like set pieces really strong from this film. But if you'd forced me to sit down and tell you what the plot to this movie was, I couldn't have. And after the rewatch, I'm going to say there's a reason why I couldn't have. This is really not a movie with plot. This is a movie with scenes.
Things happen. So, yeah. The main crux of this movie is that it's been 6 months since the tornado, 6 months since the event of the original Wizard of Oz, and Dorothy can't sleep. She has trouble sleeping. She stays awake all night, and she is, as Auntie M says, no use to her in the morning to do her chores because she's exhausted. So they take her to a doctor, Dr. Worley here, for electroshock therapy to erase the dreams of Oz from her brain to an attempt to get her to go to sleep, because apparently what's keeping her up all night is these visions of Oz that she keeps telling everyone about, and they're telling her that she's crazy because Oz isn't real. Oz is a dream.
Yeah, you got bumped on the head during a tornado, and now you talk about Oz. Like we said, this is desperately trying to be a sequel to.
Yeah, there's to the other, you know, there's things around her that she's saying. Like, she sees a key that kind of looks like an O and a Z on the hilt, and says, "No, that's just the key for the old house." And it's like she's just saying that she's, you know, Dorothy's saying Oz is real. Oz is real. I've been there, and saying no. You know, talking lions and talking scarecrows and woodsmen and wizards and things, and those aren't real. You know, you gotta essentially. There was one essay I saw about this that it's the movie itself is trying to say a message of trying to seeing how adults like to stifle children's creativity, and that's kind of like the crux of the movie is. Adults trying to stifle the creativity of children and children just trying to get their creative side out. It's yeah, one way to look at it.
Well, I think that was why this movie resonated so much with me as a kid, because I was that kid that I would kind of always talk about whatever the imagined thing that I had going on. Or sometimes it would be books I read or what I would get really engrossed in. Maybe a fantasy world that I had seen or one that I had made up. And the scene where she's trying to tell the doctor about the story of the Tin Woodsman. Which is from the book, because the book is nightmare fuel. That the woodsman keeps cutting off bits of himself and having to replace it with tin.
In the book, again, spoiler for a 100-year-old book, the woodsman was in love with a munchkin girl, but the munchkin girl was the servant of the Witch of the East. And the Witch of the East didn't like the fact that her servant girl was fraternizing with a woodsman, enchanted his axe to chop off all of his body parts until he was completely made of tin. Yeah, that's nightmare fuel.
Yeah. But I really related to that scene because that's what it was like for me as a little kid trying to talk to adults. Like, here's this thing that I am super passionate about. And then adults would be like, yeah, that's enough. Please be quiet. Yeah, you're right. She's crazy. Yeah. So I think that's what made me relate to this film when I was a little kid, is how much of the first 30 minutes of this movie are just adults telling Dorothy to shut up about things that she likes.
Yeah.
Especially
you as a woman, how many times in your life have you been told just to, you know, shut up and look pretty and all that garbage that women are told every day?
Yeah, and also I was an only child. I didn't really have friends my own age until I was a little bit older. So I was around adults all the time, and that trying to connect with adults who have decided that due to your young age, you have nothing of interest to say, you know? And I'm not necessarily saying that that's incorrect, because, you know, I'm probably not going to sit down and have long conversations with any children, but it's as an adult, I sympathize, but as a child, it's like, if you've got no other outlet, it's just kind of like, hi, please relate to me as a human being on some level. I'm not sure I necessarily got the kind of sit down and look pretty vibe so much as the adults are talking. You're annoying the adults. There are important adult things going on here, and nobody wants to talk to you about
children should be seen things. And not heard and all that.
Yeah, it was very much that. Fortunately, though, for me, nobody ever tried to give me electrotherapy to stop me from doing it.
Yeah, so. We're given the year 1899. So this is the first time we're ever giving a specific year that any of these stories are taking place in.
Yeah. I kind of hate that electrotherapy necessarily gets the bad end of the stick, because this is if it is done correctly by professionals who actually care and know what they're doing, it can be a very effective treatment for not only mental disorders, but also, pain disorders, muscular disorders, all sorts of things. Unfortunately, in this movie, it is very explicitly stated that this doctor is experimenting unethically and primarily on children.
Yeah. So we finally, there's a lot of stuff in here that could, fuel the fantasy of Oz in this one. The electroshock machine itself, the doctor is, oh, look, he has a face. And for someone who wants...
kind of TikTok-esque in the fact that it's all mechanical.
And the key does turn in it. We see a little girl give Dorothy a jack-o'-lantern because it's Halloween. Hey, it's a Halloween movie.
Possibly my favorite scene in the entire movie is very quick, and it's at the beginning, is that the girl who we will later believe is Ozma appearing to Dorothy in the hospital gives her this pumpkin. And Dorothy takes the pumpkin and puts it on the little desk in her, horrible little room they've got her in. And she takes a comb and she brushes the non-existent hair of the pumpkin so lovingly.
Well, he's got to look good for Halloween.
It's just such a beautiful little kid moment of, Dorothy trying to make sure that this pumpkin looks his best by combing his non-existent hair. It's just, it's so gorgeous, and I love it so much.
Okay, so maybe there's something I'm missing so where does the gump come from? If TikTok is coming from the electroshock machine and Jack Pumpkinhead is coming from the jack-o'-lantern, where's the gump? Is there a stuffed head on the wall that I completely missed in watching this movie?
If you missed it, so did I. But honestly, she lives in the middle of Kansas, and it's probably just wild animals that she saw. I mean, if we're taking it as this is all in her head, there's any number of random wild animals or trophy heads that she could have seen at that point in time.
And the thing about the thing is that this is also supposed to erase the fantasies and dreams that Dorothy has. But the doctor is telling Dorothy to imagine that the electroshock machine has a face and each part of is part of the body. So he's using imagination to erase imagination.
Yeah, in a way, but it's also he's using it to calm her.
Mm.
He's using it to make her act the way he wants her to act before he uses the machine to take away the way that they don't want her to act. You are allowed to imagine, but only in the prescribed way that the adults have allowed, there is so much in this first 30 minutes. Like, we talk about the nightmare fuel in the back two-thirds of the movie, but I think most of it is kind of upfront in this idea of, just adults being annoyed with you. Because what's really wrong with Dorothy?
She has an overactive imagination. Yeah, she can't sleep.
She can't, but as far as, what's wrong with Dorothy is, she can't sleep, which can be a problem. I suffer from sleep disorders as well. That's a nightmare of its own.
Well, she was a traumatic experience of being in a tornado.
So yeah, it's probably PTSD.
Yeah.
But what's the thing her aunt complains about? It's not that, you can't sleep, and therefore I'm seeing that it's making you unhappy, or that you're suffering physically. It's that you're no help to me on the farm.
Gee, yeah, what happened to all these helpers that were in the last movie, huh? Did you have to let them go?
Maybe they got turned into stone as well as their counterparts in Oz. I don't know. But anyway, as Dorothy is about to receive this electroshock, there is a sudden storm. The building gets struck by lightning. All the power goes out, so the machine doesn't work. And the mysterious little girl that Dorothy keeps seeing in the hospital shows up and says, "Come on, we got to run away. They run down to the river, which is flooding, and they fall in and get washed away. Dorothy gets up.
Ozma does not.
Yeah, Dorothy gets up on some floating, a chicken coop that's floating through down the river, but Ozma kind of, or the other girl, disappears, never to be seen again. And then Dorothy wakes up in Oz.
Yeah.
It's kind of the next thing.
Her chicken Belina is there, which earlier in the movie, we see that she hasn't laid eggs in quite a long time. And if she doesn't start laying eggs, she might end up being Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah. I always thought that it was really ridiculous for her to have a chicken. Because it's they show Toto at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And I then think it's only she ends up.
I think it's only because it was in the book and they had to get a chicken in there.
Well, yeah. And that was the thing is I didn't realize until doing the research for this. Or at least I probably read the book where it was in. But I, like I said, I'd forgotten all of those books because they made no impression on me whatsoever.
The book is much different in that it's Dorothy, Aunt Em, and Uncle Henry going on a cruise, and there's a storm, and she gets knocked off, lands in a chicken coop, and there's Belina. So Belina is not from their farm, it's just a chicken that happens to be on the cruise.
Yeah,
why is Aunt Em and Dorothy and going on a cruise? I don't know.
Yeah. But realizing that Belina is from the books is also a little bit weird. I'm going to say we've talked about how much we love puppetry on this show. This chicken puppet is probably one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. I'm sorry. It is not good.
Yeah.
I don't know how you felt about it, but every time they actually used the puppet chicken instead of like a real chicken just kind of hanging out that they dubbed a voiceover, but whenever they tried to actually puppet a chicken to have it talk and react to things, that puppet looks awful.
They probably should have got Henson, the actual Henson company, in on this. Probably would have been a better puppet.
Muppet chickens look far more realistic as chickens than this chicken did to me. And it was supposed to be matching an actual real life chicken, and it just did not work.
As a kid, I bought it, but as an adult, you can see that, yeah, there's the like animatronicness of it. It's kind of jerky a lot. Like you can kind of tell that this is not a living, breathing creature.
Yeah, and it obviously it's just the time, you know, the technology of the time, but it does not hold up. But they end up in the
Munchkinland
desert. Well, they end up in the Deadly Desert at first, and they have to get out of it because if you touch the sand, you will also turn to sand. Yeah, instantly.
The Deadly Desert is the land that surrounds Oz, which is again from the book. We didn't know at the time, but yeah, if you touch the sand, you will turn into sand, you will die.
And like instantly, we see it later happen to some of the Wheelers, and like that's there's no moment of pain or anything. It's just immediately
that's instant death.
Sand. Yeah. But once she gets out of the Deadly Desert, because fortunately she's only a few feet from actual safe land, they're basically back in Munchkin City, or what should be Munchkin City, but is now kind of just an overgrown forest. We know it should be Munchkin City because
the house.
The cabin is there. Yeah, Dorothy's house that she arrived in the first
story
visit. Yeah, And she tells Belina, this was my house. This used to be my bedroom. This used to be the Wicked Witch of the East. then she discovers the yellow brick road, but it's all torn up.
Again, if you want to take a look at this being all in Dorothy's head, it could be symbolism of that. Like, this is her childhood being torn apart.
Yeah. They follow what is left of the Yellow Brick Road back to what should be the Emerald City, but is now just kind of stone. There's no emeralds. There's no green. There's... All right.
This is another thing that changes up here, is that in the books, the Emerald City only has emeralds on the outside, and they give you the green glasses to make you believe it's emeralds on the inside because it's so bright, you gotta wear the shades. In this movie, it is saying that the Emerald City is completely made out of emeralds, which only exists in the 1939 movie. So it's another thing of they're trying to connect it to the old movie, and they're also trying to connect it to the books, which is, yeah.
They're trying to have it a bit of both ways.
Yeah.
Because there are still buildings standing, you know, and walls and other things that are no longer green because the emeralds have been removed. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to say that it's like in the books, it's more a facade. Mm-hmm. Of green rather than being constructed completely of emerald. But they're in the books, it's more like a lot of it is green glass or other green things. Not all of it is emeralds. Mm-hmm. It's just the color of emeralds rather than being, you know, an extreme amount of emeralds, I guess. But in the Judy Garland film, they were trying to make it so fantastical that it is actually just fully made of emeralds.
Yeah.
So they're trying to do somewhere in between in this film, it looks like.
Yeah, and poor Dorothy, she enters the former Emerald City and sees everyone has turned to stone, including the Tin Man and the Lion. And
well, the Tin Man is not stone. The Tin Man's just tin and standing there.
But the Tin Man also was a person. So
yeah.
You can assume, again,
maybe
assume,
his heart's turned to stone.
You can assume that at some point, since the Tin Man was a person, that he might still have a soul. So, and that's why he turned to stone.
Yeah, maybe.
What really gets her, she seems to be really more emotionally over the lion being turned to stone. Like, she hugs the lion and said, "Oh, lion, what happened to you?"
Yeah, I get that. I mean, you know my feeling on animals. Which I'd probably be, it's like 700 people standing around me turned to statues and one dog, and I'd be like, "Oh, poor puppy." But, you know, she finds a bunch of dancing women statues, but they have no heads, you know. Mm-hmm. But everybody else seems to have turned into a statue just wherever they happened to be at the time.
And
written on the wall,
"Beware the Wheelers."
Another thing that is apparently from the books. I was like, find me the person who came up with this nightmare so that I can slap them. Because I always just figured it was somebody who worked on this film. Because this is the only time I've ever come into this concept, I guess. But apparently they are also in the books.
Mm-hmm. And much like this version, they have wheels on their hands and wheels on their feet. And I've seen other adaptations of this story, which just has the Wheelers just being people who rode around on wheels and not having the look of the book. But this one is really getting that look of them just being elongated limbs with wheels on them. And that's just, they get around. And again, another thing of it's this being in Dorothy's head, the sound that the Wheelers make is the same sound of the wheels on the gurney from the hospital.
Yeah, and it is a don't watch this movie with headphones on, because that is a not a good sound.
These wheelers need some WD-40 on their joints.
Yeah.
The wheelers get shades because, I mean, again, these wheelers are supposed to be very scary because they have these very scary masks. And even when you see their faces, are just not necessarily scary, but just creepy.
Yeah, they're always screaming and their makeup is done kind of weird. And yeah.
They chase Dorothy. Let's kind of skip through this here.
Yeah, they chase Dorothy and Blina.
And she finds this dead end. And she uses the Oz key to open the wall to get into this secret room where she meets TikTok.
Yeah. And it is said, this is where I'm going to be like, this is a dumb idea, because it's said on TikTok that he is guaranteed to last for 1,000 years. But apparently that's only if you constantly wander behind him turning that stupid key. Because he runs down in minutes.
Well, it said it would function for 100. Never said it would actually run for 100 years. It's like, it's guaranteed to function for 100 years. So, like, it's 100 years and warranties and all that. And, yeah. So, yeah.
Not truth in advertising, in my opinion.
Are you saying you want to talk to Oz's manager?
Yes. I'm going to get all Karen, whatever the you know, charisma or whatever.
So he has, TikTok has different keys that have different functions on him. There's one for thinking, one for speaking, one for movement. He's a clockwork. He is a clockwork man because he has a lot of clockwork parts. Since I guess you can call him steampunk before steampunk, and it was in the 1900s.
Yeah, he did very much, you know, especially by the time this movie is made, he has a very steampunk aesthetic. This is just a poorly designed thing. TikTok is poorly designed all around. Like, why do you have different keys for different things, and why does he wind down within just minutes? He's supposed to be like the army of Oz, and I'm like, well, no wonder everybody turned to stone. Your army is one dude who can only sustain a fight for about a minute and a half.
Well, he even says it himself that he used up too much of his own energy fighting the Wheelers.
Well, yeah, but that Wheeler fight, quote unquote, is literally about a minute. That's not a sustained battle. That's like at most a skirmish. I don't know.
One thing that Dorothy does say later in the movie that they should have built him with the ability to wind himself up.
That seems like inventing perpetual motion, but at the same time, you're in a land of magic, so probably a better way you could have done this.
And they make it clear that the reason TikTok did not turn to stone is because he is not a living being. He is mechanical.
And very proud of it.
Yeah, he's very proud to not... Unlike the Tin Man, he does not want any kind of humanity. He is enjoying being a... I guess you can call him a robot.
Yeah, when Baum would have written this, the concept of robot hadn't really been introduced to society yet. But a lot of people do look back on this character and think that this was sort of like a proto-robot. Mm-hmm. But TikTok does help Dorothy defeat... Well, scare away the Wheelers.
I'm trying to figure out what the lunch pail was for, because he specifically asked to hold the lunch pail.
Didn't he hit one of them with that or something?
Probably. I think he probably just hit him with it, but he just likes to hold that lunch pail that Dorothy found from the lunch pail tree. And he takes one after defeating the Wheelers. He takes one that takes him to Mumby to get some answers of what's going on.
Yeah, and they find out that the Scarecrow has been captured by the Gnome King. The Gnome King is the one who turned everybody to stone and took all the emeralds and all the other stuff. So the Gnome King is our big bad.
He's now the ruler of Oz because there really is no one left in Oz to be alive.
Yeah. I will say that we keep jumping back and forth during the movie, and we're probably not really going to talk about it a lot, but there are moments where it cuts away and you see the Gnome King talking to his, like,
minions,
second in command or whatever, and it's all done with claymation, and the claymation is really cool because I love claymation. I love stop motion of any sort, but I especially have a soft spot for claymation because it was big at the time. You know, we had California Raisins and stuff like that.
Yeah, which Will Vinton. I wouldn't say this is Will Vinton level, but it was a lot of the claymation and stop motion really does hold up. That part does hold up.
Yeah, it's such an interesting form of I'm not even sure if you would call it puppetry. I guess it does kind of go with that sort of idea. But the stop motion and claymation animation has always been fascinating to me. And this is a really interesting one, the way that they move the faces through the rock.
Yeah.
You know, and have the faces and hands come out of rock like that. And I really do think you're correct in that it does pretty much hold up.
I do like the fact that we never see the Gnome King until they get to the Gnome King's mountain. Like, we hear him, but we never actually see him.
And the voice is good. You know, of course, the actor has such a great kind of commanding voice for the character. So you don't really need to see him until our characters, you know, until Dorothy really meets him.
Yeah.
But we're back in the tower and the Emerald, what used to be the Emerald City. We find Princess Mombi.
Yeah. And Dorothy wants to know what's going on, and Mombi kind of captures her, saying, I'm gonna lock you in the tower until you're old enough that I can take your head like I took all of their heads.
Yeah, because she has the whole, like, hall of cabinets that just each one has a head.
Yeah.
And she wants Dorothy to grow up enough for her head to be pretty. Not beautiful, you understand, but pretty. I love that she meets Mombi, and Mombi is immediately like, I'm going to neg this little girl. Like, I don't know what's more cruel about this. It's like the fact that she's like, I'm going to take your head, or... Well, I'll take your head, but it won't be very pretty, and it'll be, like, the least interesting one in my collection, but it might be worth my...
And, of course, you know, like you said, poor TikTok just completely runs down, and it's completely useless.
Yeah. I am going to point out a thing in Dorothy's personality that is both adorable and infuriating, and it first shows up in this scene, where TikTok is saying, I'm sorry, my action has run down, I can't help you. And Dorothy is being dragged away, basically to her death. You know, I mean, it might happen in a decade, but that is what, it, you know, imprisonment and then death. And Dorothy just yells back, like, it's okay, TikTok, it can't be helped, it's not your fault, it's fine. And I want to say, like, that is not in me.
That is the most understanding 9-year-old ever.
Yeah, if I was being dragged away to my imminent demise, I think I'd be like, you stupid little clockwork nonsense. It's like,
what good are you?
Who made you? I want to talk to your manager.
And of course, we see this tower, and there is this very beautiful painting that Dorothy looks at of King Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion, and I kind of want that.
That is a really cool painting, and I think if they release prints of that, they could make a bit of money off of those of us who grew up with this movie. And then she meets Jack Pumpkinhead, who will be our scarecrow insert for this film.
Yes, and I like how his first instance is, can you check my head for spoilage?
Yeah, he's worried that the pumpkin that he has for a head has spoiled.
So yes, and again, his story is very similar to the book. In the book, Jack was built by Tip to get away from Mombi, and Mombi uses the power of life to bring him to life to kind of be a servant, but kind of runs away with Tip.
Yeah, in this film, Ozma, who is never Tip in this film, Ozma, we find out late in the film, was the one who created Jack and was apparently using Jack basically just as a scarecrow. It was just supposed to be a scary looking thing
to scare Mombi, to keep
Mombi from coming in the room.
Yeah.
And Mombi instead decided to test the powder of life on Jack just to see if it worked or to see if the magician she bought it from had, you know, sold
her
nonsense stuff.
Is anything in Oz really nonsense stuff? Since everything in Oz is nonsense stuff.
Well, you know, I was trying to avoid other words that we might have to bleep. But Dorothy, upon hearing that there is a thing called the powder of life that can bring inanimate objects to life, goes, hey, why don't we build a monstrosity out of furniture and that animal head up on the wall, and I will just steal the powder of life.
Gotta escape some kind of way.
But, like, what's wrong with Dorothy that was her first... I mean, maybe after a few hours I'd come up with that plan if I was super desperate, but Dorothy is just immediately like, let's create a monster!
Well, keep in mind, she also saw the Gnome King's mountain right outside that Emerald City Tower, and that's exactly her beeline. She needs to go to the Gnome King to fix all of this, so instant escape plan. Also, let's go with something that's a little kind of disturbing is Jack's insistence of calling Dorothy Mom.
It makes more sense at the end of the movie.
Yes.
But it is creepy for most of the movie because you do have what is essentially an adult man's voice. And it is Brian Henson being the sweetest little cinnamon roll. Like, the voice he uses for Jack is just so adorable. But it is very obviously an adult man's voice.
And, you know, but even if you didn't know the story, you would at least know that Ozma must be of similar stature to Dorothy, since he does confuse the two.
See, I never got that as a kid until the end of the movie. I was just like, well, it's female. It must be mom, I guess. Like,
yeah.
This is only the second woman he's ever seen in his life, I'm assuming, you know?
Third, if you want to count Mombi.
Yeah. But, or I thought that, you know, it's interesting that he remembers Ozma because... he says, you know, like, my mom built me to scare Mombi and then Mombi brought me to life. So, but he doesn't really remember what his mom looked like.
Nor does he remember the magic words that brought him to life.
Yeah, so how much did he only hear the story of Ozma, like, secondhand through Mombi? Like, when he's like, where did I come from? And she's like, eh. Some little girl created you and I just brought you to life on a whim. I don't know.
And pretty much as soon as he brings, or as soon as Mombi brings Jack to life, she captures Ozma and puts her in the mirror.
Yeah. Also, I like his thing that she was wearing a particular head the day that she brought him to life, and she must have not worn that head since because she doesn't remember that he's up there.
That is a nice little trick that Mombi has the memories of whatever head she's wearing, and then doesn't have those memories when she's wearing another head.
That seems like it would be an imperfect existence, let's say. I mean, does she have a book of stuff you should remember that every head has to read when she puts it? How much individual, agency does each head have?
Mm.
Because the heads aren't evil. They're just random people who were in the Emerald City.
Again, this is another thing from the book that the princess will be either a good person or a bad person depending on which head she's wearing that day. And that's the personality of that particular head, which is something I really wish would have been in this movie.
But the problem is you can't make her a really effective villain if half the time she's helping Dorothy and half the time she's trying to kill her.
Mm.
Because everything in this movie is kind of really sped up. Like we're slowing it way down. This happens in minutes.
Yeah, so she gets let's just keep this going. She gets the power of wife, and again, it's that scene that will never leave my mind. Dorothy Gale, Dorothy Gale, while all these other heads are screaming,
yeah,
as Dorothy is stealing the power of life.
That's probably the scene that sticks with most people. I think if you were to ask them about their nightmares from this movie, is the like hallway of heads screaming and the weird, weird voice that Jean Marsh uses. when she starts screaming Dorothy's name, that is just everything about that is a giant nope. Dorothy is able to wind TikTok up, bring him back up with her. She explains the plan as they're running up the stairs. And Jack has, she leaves Jack and TikTok to go down and get the powder of life, and they're mostly able to create the giant monstrosity, flying monstrosity.
There's a hiccup where TikTok's thinking runs down.
Yeah, again, this nonsense. Is a badly made bit of technology.
They eventually they get the monstrosity alive with the Gump, and poor Gump. I have to say a lot about the Gump. It's almost sad that he says, the last thing I remember, I was walking through the forest and heard a loud noise. Like, oh, that hurts.
And you're like, Bambi's mom, no!
The Gump is Bambi's mom.
Yeah. I think the Gump is probably my favorite character in the film. Because he's just so snarky and resigned. Like, what can I do? I'm ahead.
And he doesn't even want to exist. He just, I'm alive again.
Same.
He doesn't even want to be attached to anything. Like, he even says, like, what if I saw another Gump? I'd die a second time of embarrassment.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't want anything attached to him that isn't a normal Gump body.
Yeah, please look for my next academic paper on the psychology of the Gump.
doesn't even want his head to be tied to the couch once they land, so he can at least start moving. Like, nope, I don't want to do anything. Just leave me here, leave me the head.
The Gump is able to fly them across the desert. They give him wings out of palm fronds, and for some reason, because this is Oz, that works. The Gump is able to fly them across the deadly desert that exists between Emerald City and the Gnome King's Mountain. There is a point where the ropes that holds this entire nonsense together kind of break and everybody falls out, but fortunately they fall on the mountain.
And they fall on the couch because this is a kid's movie.
Mombi, seeing that they've escaped, sends the Wheelers after them, but at least half of them probably run right into the Deadly Desert and turn into sand. Whereas Mombi and a couple of the Wheelers end up going through the tunnels under the ground to get to the mountain. But Dorothy makes it to the Gnome King, and he tells her that he has turned Scarecrow into an ornament. Now, I want to tell you a funny story about this. In my brain, everybody in this movie got turned into Christmas ornaments. In rewatching the movie, this is not true. They are just turned into random objects from, like, some crappy antique store.
Well, he does say knickknacks, and we see
eventually that. He does, but the most common word they use is ornaments, and in my little kid brain, even watching the movie, in my memory, I remembered the word ornament, and so they're all, like, various Christmas ornaments or small statues or whatever. They're not, like, random vases or chairs
I mean, we do get the Gnome King's motivation that all of the jewels in the world, he specifically says the world, come from the Gnome King's mountain. They're all created in the Gnome King by his minions for himself. And that the emeralds in the mountain were stolen and used to create the Emerald City. So when he finally figures this out, he takes the Scarecrow, saying that it was the Scarecrow's fault, even though
He was the king of the Emerald City at the time.
Yes. Which is, again, yes. But even Dorothy said, you know, the emeralds were already there. You see her crying, like, he didn't take them, they were already there. Why don't you go get the wizard? The wizard did it, so go find him.
But of course, yeah, you know, go back to Kansas, find the wizard.
Because depending on which prequel you're watching, it was the wizard's idea for the Emerald City. The nightmare fuel of the design of the Scarecrow.
Yeah, the Scarecrow is very creepy in this. But the Gnome King says that he's turned the Scarecrow into an ornament, which in this case just means a random object in a room. And that you have to go in, touch an object, and say the word Oz, and if it's the Scarecrow,
it'll turn back into the Scarecrow.
It'll turn back into the Scarecrow, but if you guess wrong three times, you get turned into a random object.
And again, the stop motion on the Gnome King when we first see him is amazing. And the thing about it is, as each character guesses wrong, the Gnome King gets more and more human.
Yeah, it's a really neat effect how they move from, like, a completely claymation, stop motion creature into more
an actor in makeup.
An actor in makeup, yeah.
One of my favorite transitions is when he goes from stone and then from stone eyes turning into human eyes.
Yeah, that's a good one. And also very creepy because the actor still looks mostly stone, but there's like human eyes moving around inside stone. It's a very unsettling effect.
I still think that's claymation and they just use like glass eyes for that.
Maybe. I honestly don't know, but however they did it, it is very effective.
Now this is where I'm going to say my theory. Now every time someone guesses wrong, you hear a thunderbolt. My theory is that the lightning storm didn't necessarily happen as the movie is seeing it. These electric bolts are the electroshock therapy going into Dorothy's head.
It's a good theory. I could see that. I could see that being held up by the text of the film, yes.
As, you know, more and more thunder is happening and more of her friends are being essentially erased.
Yeah. And no, this is her, I can see that. That's an excellent theory.
Her holding on to that little bit of childhood she has, this imaginary world that she created while the electricity is trying to erase it. Even at one point, the Gnome King said, we find out the Gnome King has the ruby slippers. that they fell off of Dorothy's feet as she was flying through the sky, leaving Oz to go home, and that it just landed on the Gnome King's palace, the Gnome King's mountain, and he's been using it, which is how he took over Oz to begin with, because he used the magical powers of the Ruby Slippers to turn everyone to stone, to get all the emeralds back, to give Mumby all the heads, to essentially become the governing body of Oz.
Yeah, and if all you've seen is the Judy Garland film, you don't realize how powerful, I guess, the Ruby Slippers are. They're really just a MacGuffin that are there to get her home. Mm-hmm. But this film points out that, like, they're an all-powerful magical object. You just wish for anything and it happens.
Wish for anything, click your heels, and you get it.
So
which is why the witch wanted Dorothy, them to begin with.
Yeah, whereas Dorothy just wished to go home, and that was the only wish she ever used them for. The Gnome King is, I wish for my emeralds back. I wish for all my enemies to be turned to stone. I wish for, you know, whatever. But yeah, as her friends fail, the Gnome King says, I will give you the Ruby Slippers and let you go back to Kansas.
But you will forget about Oz.
Yeah. This also holds up with your theory. Mm-hmm. She can just choose to forget about Oz, and she'll wake up in Kansas, and she'll be a normal little girl.
With no imagination.
With no imagination. Which is not a normal little girl, by the way.
Yeah.
But Dorothy says no. No, she wants to stay in Oz if she wants to help her friends. So she goes into the ornament room and to make her guesses, and Princess Mombi late to the party.
Dorothy's coming.
She just shows up and she's like, be careful, Dorothy Gale is here. And then
she's already here.
Like, we've already had tea and cookies, okay? It's I know.
And she's still saying, Dorothy's on her way. Oh, wait, like, she's already here?
Yeah. He's like, no, I've already neutralized her three companions. It's fine.
Why don't you just turn her into an ornament? Because this is more fun. He's essentially playing with his food.
But he puts Mombi in a cage because he's going to decide what to do with her later after he's finished playing with Dorothy. Dorothy figures out possibly the most obvious thing in the world is that the Scarecrow has turned into a giant emerald. Which, really? That's, nobody else can figure that out? Takes the 9-year-old to figure that out?
It's 9-year-old mentality. Again, if Oz exists as Dorothy's imagination, this is how it would work out.
Yeah.
Everyone from Oz got turned into green ornaments. And again, as she gets another one of her friends back, the Gnome King gets less and less human.
Yeah. So he is obviously feeding off of whatever...
life.
Whatever life force was sustaining them.
Which is weird. Again, TikTok is not human. He's not a living creature.
Yeah, but the Gnome King was also most, like, the most human we see him before TikTok. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really change much after TikTok gets turned into an ornament.
His rock beard becomes human hair. That's the major change.
Yeah.
And even he says it, that once Dorothy fails, that the Gnome King will become human, completely human. We're never given a reason why the Gnome King wants to become human. And why
never given a reason why almost anything in this movie happens. So.
Well, why doesn't he just use the Ruby Slippers to turn himself into a human? Unless, again, it's more fun to torture people.
Because this is more fun, yeah. But Dorothy gets the Scarecrow back. She gets Jack back. And then the Gnome King just starts destroying everything and like, no, I'm not having this. I'm just going to eat Jack.
Well, he eats the sofa.
Yeah, or Gump loses his body. Part of the Gump's, the couch he's attached to. But then he's like going to eat Jack. And this is a legitimately terrifying scene if you're a little kid.
Yeah.
Like he's dangling
the music,
Jack.
The stop motion, the fire. The fact
you can see Jack staring, like Jack's perspective staring down the gullet into like the infinite death he is about to be swallowed into.
And the stop motion of Jack as he's being held.
Yeah. And I think the thing that sells the thing most is like, you know, give it up to like tiny little baby Firuza, like just screaming her head off of like, no, you know, but there's nothing she can do. She has no power in this situation. And it's just kind of terrifying to watch her like have to stand there and watch this thing screaming, "Mom, don't let him eat me." As she's like completely powerless to help.
Her friend is about to die and she can do nothing about it.
But we get the Deus Ex Chickena here. the entire film, we haven't really mentioned this, but the entire film people keep saying like, she has a chicken? Get the chicken! Don't let her have the chicken! You know, and there's all this thing about like everybody freaking out over this chicken. And we finally sort of get why. Is that she's been hiding in Jack's head.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets so scared at the, you know, about to be eaten by the Gnome King that she finally lays that egg. And it falls into the Gnome King's mouth. And this is when we learn for the first time in the movie that apparently eggs are poisonous to gnomes and will kill them.
So gnomes don't eat breakfast, apparently.
And the thing is that they actually say, like, don't you know eggs are poison? And Dorothy's like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. Like, Dorothy just completely no-sells that. Like, no, they're not. They're eggs. What is wrong with you people?
Even Belina says poison. Since when are eggs poison? Poisoned. And it's the Gnome King disintegrating as pretty much becoming a skull out of stone, poisoned to gnomes.
Yeah, it's another little good bit of claymation as he just kind of crumbles away. The thing is, though, is that this idea of eggs being poisonous to gnomes or being taking away a gnome's power is an interesting bit in the books and an interesting bit of potential social commentary by Baum, because he apparently he came up with this idea after talking to like a feminist thinker mm-hmm. of the time who told him that eggs were in most philosophies, mythologies, you know, of various cultures related to the feminine. And in the books, we never see a female gnome. It's an entirely male species. And so the idea is that they're not really scared of the eggs. They're scared of women.
Hmm.
Because in the books, apparently the Scarecrow pelts the Gnome King with eggs. And they don't actually harm the Gnome King, but they do distract him just long enough for Dorothy to, like, take a magical object or whatever and defeat him that way. So in the books, it seems like eggs have zero impact on gnomes. That it's not the eggs that do any damage to them, it's their fear of eggs and what they represent.
Well, I mean, that's kind of why eggs work with Easter as a symbol of rebirth in nature.
Yeah, fertility, all that fun stuff. But yeah. So basically the gnomes are incels and a little girl takes them out because they are weak and pathetic.
That is so wow, that's some great commentary right there.
Yeah, no, I'm happy with it. Thank you, Return to Oz.
Yeah, and Dorothy now takes the slippers off the dead Gnome King.
Yeah. And the thing is I love that she runs back to get them because everything is crumbling around her. Like, the whole mountain is falling down, and everybody's like, we gotta get out of here, Dorothy. And Dorothy's like, hold on, shoes.
But it's like how would they, there's no way to get out of that room they were in because the Gnome King controlled the door. So like even if they could run, they couldn't have, there's nowhere for them to run to.
Yeah, but I just give me the joke.
you're talking about a sequel to a movie where three women were trying to kill each other over shoes.
Yeah. Please laugh. But she gets out there and she wishes that everyone that was from Oz would return to Oz.
Yeah, everything was put back the way it was before the Gnome King took over.
So the interesting thing is that she gets the Gump, she gets Scarecrow, she gets Jack, she gets her and Belina. I don't really know how they're from Oz, but okay. And she gets Mombi still in the cage.
Mm-hmm.
Returned, and then they all go, well, where's TikTok? And she says, well, you know, I got distracted before I could give my final guess. But there's a military medal that has somehow become stuck to one of the Gump's antlers.
And somehow the magic still, yeah, somehow the magic still works even though the Gnome King is dead.
Yeah, but also I like that the power of the wish returned TikTok even though he wasn't in his normal form.
Mm, yeah.
That even as an ornament, it was like, oh, this thing is from Oz, better take it with you, you know.
Yeah.
So Dorothy does the, you know, she touches it, she screams Oz, TikTok's back, yay! And then we immediately are just like, everybody in Oz is back. They're free of their stony prison. Everything is being restored to its previous glory. Scarecrow's back. You know,
get Dorothy riding the lion with, I assume, a munchkin, because it is a small person.
Yeah, I'm guessing. We don't really see, you know, we hear about the munchkins a lot, but we don't really see them in the film so much.
And TikTok got some C-3PO gold plating thing going on.
Yeah, they really give TikTok a shine up, because he'd gotten banged up and dented pretty bad for most of the film.
He was mostly bronze. This is straight up gold.
They get back to the Emerald City. Everybody is restored. Everything is fine. Scarecrow is there with his crown, because he's been the king of Oz there. And immediately the crowd just starts looking at Dorothy and chanting, Queen of Oz! Queen of Oz! Queen of Oz! And I'm like,
yeah,
your king is standing right there. Like,
but it's like she's their savior, so they want her as their queen.
And it's the Gump that starts this. Monarchy.
It's the Gump that starts the chant of be the Queen of Oz.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe the Gump just wants to overturn the
monarchy
system
here.
I don't know. But yeah, the monarchy in Oz is very weird, because it's said that Ozma's father was the king.
And then the wizard came.
And then the wizard came and dethroned him. So Ozma should be the rightful queen, because hereditary monarchies are a thing we did for far too long in our history and still do.
Yeah.
But somehow the Scarecrow ended up king.
Well,
they're just handing the crown to Dorothy.
What we know of the story is when the wizard left, he specifically left the Emerald City in the Scarecrow's care, since he was the smart one.
Yeah. And then we discover that the little girl who's been in the mirror the whole time that we saw in the hospital at the beginning of the movie, that's really Ozma. Dorothy helps her out of the mirror, and we find out that Mombi is the one that put her in the mirror in exchange for the Gnome King giving her, you know, power and 30 heads.
Yeah. First we find this out is that Dorothy knows that she has to go back and wishes to be in both places at one time, which is the entire thing of Ozma being released. So it's like, It would have made more sense if Ozma and Dorothy were played by the same actress, but I can understand it wouldn't make sense in the hospital scene.
Yeah. Also, though, I think if we're going with the theory that this is all in Dorothy's head, do you want to be the plain little girl from Kansas that is a queen, or do you want to be like the girl with the really beautiful hair in the amazing dress?
Yeah. Again, if we are going with
who's just being slightly older, maybe. Yeah. Ozma looks slightly older, you know, so
she's definitely taller.
Again, so this might be like Dorothy's kind of, you know,
fantasy of herself.
Slightly more fantastical version of herself.
And if we are going with this being an all in Dorothy's head, that girl drowned and now like exists in her fantasy world.
Yeah, I mean, possibly it's like, you know, this girl risked everything to get me out of that hospital. She died for it, so I'm going to make her the queen in my
fantasy
perfect
world.
Fantasy. But, you know, Ozma sends her home using the ruby slippers, which Dorothy hands over. Belina says there's no way she's going back to Kansas because Kansas is awful. And Belina,
even though she spent the entire movie saying let's go back home to Kansas.
Yeah. Belina is correct. I have a history of annoyance with children's books. Mm-hmm. This series, Chronicles of Narnia is a big one for me on this. Even things like Harry Potter, where it's like you have a kid who's not living a very good life. You send them to a magical place where they have everything. Their life is perfect and wonderful, and there is no pain or horror. And then at the end of the book, you send them back to the painful, horrible place because somehow that's better. I do not understand why adults keep writing this into books, and I beg you to stop.
Well, eventually Bomb just straight up has Dorothy move to Oz.
Which is fine. You know, like, that's okay. But, you know, in the Judy Garland movie, you know, Aunt Em and Uncle Henry are perfect, wonderful, heartland people. But in almost any other version of this story that's ever been put to screen, they're not. Including this one.
Yeah, again, Aunt Em wants Dorothy to do chores around the farm, and since she can't because she can't sleep, what good is she?
Yeah, Dorothy is not being productive labor, so let's shock it into her. Like, ugh, Aunt Em is the worst in this movie. It's okay in the first movie because she's going back to a place where, like, everybody super duper loves her, and it's, like, her only real problem was it's a little boring.
Well, it's also, you know, her neighbor, Miss Gulch, wants to kill her dog.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you just smack Miss Gulch until she leaves. Like, you know. But, you know, for the most part, Dorothy's life is pretty good. You know, that one horrible woman that for some reason the police are listening to is like the one bad thing in her life, other than just she's kind of wistful in that, you know, what we think of now as that Disney princess sort of way, you know.
Yeah.
But in this one, Dorothy has no reason to go back home. What is she going home to? An aunt who wants to fry her brains? An uncle that just kind of exists, but we don't actually see him do anything good or bad during the movie. Like, he's just there. But anyway, Dorothy goes back to Kansas because that's the way the story has to go. And she wakes up in the mud next to the river, having been washed, you know, aside. Her family is like, oh, yay, you're not dead. By the way, the hospital was hit by lightning. Everything burned down. Everybody got out except the doctor, who ran back in to save the machines and was killed.
And for some reason, the nurse has been arrested. We don't know why. We don't know what for. But it just to mirror the fact that Mombi was in a cage in her dream.
Here's the thing, is it took me a while to figure this out, because it is said in a kind of screaming way during a lightning storm by a child who has been dubbed over by another child actress. The girl playing Ozma was a British actress, but they wanted Ozma to sound American. I don't know why. Don't ask me. So they used the director's daughter to dub over all the lines, and sometimes it's not very clear. And the scene at the beginning in the hospital during the escape is one of those times. She tells Dorothy that they have to get out because the basement is full of people it didn't work on. So apparently he has been taking kids, experimenting on them. The experiments fail, and
the kids are driven insane.
I don't know what happens to the kids. We're never told, but like, the basement is full of people who this went wrong on. Which it's is possible.
Again, it could have driven them insane, could have freaking lobotomized them for all we know.
Or he could have told the family they were dead and is just keeping them to experiment on. It's completely unclear as to what's going on in this nightmare institution. But the nurse is obviously in on it.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there was something illegal about the way that he was doing things that only came to light when everybody showed up to evacuate the people from the fire. Which fortunately it seems they did, because only one person died in the fire, and that was the doctor.
Because he wanted to go back in and get his toys.
Yeah. And apparently it was bad enough that the nurse is now going to jail for it. The movie is not entirely clear. And in fact, it took me years to figure out why she's in the paddy wagon at the end, because like you, I just thought like, well, Mombi was in a cage. So they're like, remember the actress? She also played Mombi, but there is technically a reason. It's just not really well explained.
And yeah, the movie fast forwards some time later. I assume it's within a month, because we don't see any snow on the ground or anything. That the new house has been built. The new farmhouse has been built. Dorothy has her own room again. Again, if you want to continue the idea of this is, it was all in Dorothy's brain. You don't see Belina. Rest in peace, Belina.
Yeah.
You were Kentucky Fried and you were good.
Yeah. But she does see something in her mirror. She sees Ozma and the ghost of Belina.
Well, she does the Oz. She does the Oz logo. She draws the Oz logo on the mirror and says Ozma. And then there's Ozma in the mirror with Belina. And yeah, they even said if Dorothy ever wants to come back to Oz, all she has to do is say her name and say that she wants to go back. And the first thing she does is, Ma, Auntie M, look at this. And I was just saying, shut up.
I do think that this is, if we're taking the all in her head theory,
mm-hmm.
I think this is Dorothy learning to keep it to her damn self.
Like, not everyone wants to be part of your fantasy world.
Like, you can still visit Oz, but don't tell your crazy aunt who wants to fry your brains.
Yeah. There are times when you need to keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, and I hate that seems to be the moral of the story, is like, keep your fantasy life from the adults, or else they'll do horrible things to you.
It's almost the same as the ending of Labyrinth. where it's kind of all in Sarah's head. And if you ever want to return, all you have to do is say that you need them.
Yeah, I think that was more supposed to be about, like, growing up. But it makes more sense in Sarah's case because she's, like, in her late teens or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's getting very close to legal adulthood. So I can sort of see that being like, hey, kid, time to grow up. But it's okay to remain a little childish occasionally in your bedroom when all the doors are locked. But in this one, it's like, she's 9. Like, let the 9-year-old be a kid. Like, I realize you live on a farm in Kansas and times were tough, but come on. But, you know, she gets to go out and play with Toto, and we get the end credits, and everything seems fine, and her brain isn't fried.
Even Auntie M, once she sees that Dorothy's calling her, kind of gives her a look, like, oh, God, here we go again. You know, you two, go outside and play. It's too nice a day to stay inside. As if to kind of get her active and... Yeah.
They did that to me as a kid, too. Like, stop sitting inside daydreaming. Go outside and play. So I just go outside and daydream. But they kind of left me alone because I'd at least be sitting outside on the grass in a patch of sunlight or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess was better, ?
Get the sun. It'll make you healthy because we didn't know about
vitamin
UV
D, I guess. But, yeah. You know.
I mean, I don't know about current Kiki, but just going outside and playing with your dog.
I don't know. A thing which I wish I could do more, but...
Yeah.
I actually did spend a lot of time outside as a kid. I was a very outdoorsy kid in the sense of I liked to be outside, not necessarily that I liked to play sports or go hiking or camping or anything. I hated those things. But as far as just the, like, being outside was fine. You know, I would ride my bike in a circle and think about things, or I would wander outside and sing songs to myself or something. But, you know. Back to the movie, because we're supposed to be talking about a movie.
Yeah, there was attempts to branch this out. And I was talking to Kiki before we started recording about this. There was attempts to get these characters into the parks. Return to Oz characters. There was a float in the Main Street Electrical Parade for Return to Oz, and it took me years, but I finally found video footage that this existed, and I just showed Kiki right before we started recording. Because it was in 1985 summer, and for those of you who probably will want to know what this looks like, it's two boxes made entirely of mirrors. And it's mostly marionettes of TikTok, the Tin Man, the Lion, and Jack Pumpkinhead, and the Gump, and two suit actors as Dorothy and the Scarecrow, and other costume actors as the other Oz people from the end of the movie. Again, because it's supposed to look like the Emerald City throne room, Mombi's throne room, whatever you want to call it, and it's all made of mirrors. So when they stored this, they started in an area where it can get hit by sunlight. And I hope you guys know what happens when sunlight hits a bunch of mirrors. Poof.
Yeah, this whole thing went up in a beautiful, I'm assuming, conflagration. Honestly, by that point, the movie had already not been the box office draw they had hoped. So they just never bothered to rebuild it.
Yeah. So if you can go on YouTube and just search for Main Street Electrical Parade 1985, you could probably see very, very old, grainy 80s camcorder footage of this, because that's the only footage of this that exists. Like, there's no professional video recordings of this, unfortunately.
Yeah, if there was official Disney footage, where I'm assuming there has to be because Disney has been decataloging everything to do with the park since they opened, but it hasn't been really released to the public. This movie does exist still in one of the parks.
Yes, we were talking about this again before we recorded. Disneyland Paris. If you go to Disneyland Paris and ride the Storybook Canal ride, Storybook Land Canal, I don't know how to say it in French, but if you ride that, you will see at the end of the ride a nice scale model of the Emerald City from Return to Oz with Dorothy, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion right in front of it, little figurines. Playing a little, some of the score from the movie, or the Main Street Electrical Parade version of the score from the movie, and it's representing the Wizard of Oz. It's straight up not, there's no mention of Return to Oz. It is specifically saying the Wizard of Oz. Because, again, I guess they want to step away from this movie and get to the more well-known version of the story.
I will say about this movie, there were two children in this movie, of course. There's Fruit Box, there's Dorothy, and then there was the girl who played Ozma. Emma Ridley, yeah. Apparently, you know, they did the normal thing for child actors now that we have, you know, laws about child actors, thank goodness, that it was, you know, short filming days and stuff because so much of the movie required a child actor. But the interesting thing is that apparently Fariza Balk did all of her own stunts, is what I have read.
That is, for a 9-year-old, 10-year-old, that is a lot to ask. There isn't a lot of what you would consider stunts to be.
Well, but there's a lot of, like, what looks like wire work and stuff. There's a lot of, like, Dorothy falling through things and flying through things. And, of course, there is the river scene at the beginning, which, granted, it was probably shallow, it was probably controlled, they probably had pumps to turn off the flow of water and things, but that still is water. You know, there still is a potential for, you know, something to go horribly wrong there. If that is true that she did her own stunts, one, amazing job as a kid, but also two, maybe not a job they should have allowed you to do.
Yeah,
I don't know. That just, it kind of makes me feel bad. But there are stories that it did take a toll on her. That some of the scenes were a little too strenuous on her, her young body.
I've read some stories of her passing out during filming. Because of pretty much everything along with the movie. But let's ask the question. Is there magic in this movie? I'm going to say yes, but not in the, this is a good movie, you should watch it all the time. It's like, there's a good movie in here that is not Nightmare Fuel.
But that's not the movie we got.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if any Oz movie made after 1939 is always going to be compared to that movie. And if they had just made a straight kids fantasy movie, I don't know if it would have gotten the cult status it did get. It might have just been forgotten, but I think it wouldn't have been the Nightmare Fuel that this movie did become.
Yeah,
I still like this movie, though.
This is also going to be a quantifiable yes? ? Because I did kind of enjoy watching this again because I do have such strong and strange memories of it from my childhood. And it had probably been since my childhood since I had seen this. You know, I probably haven't watched this since I was maybe 14. However, I'm not sure it really counts as a good film on its own. I think it's one of those that still exists for where you would want to watch it as one of those, like, you know, I don't want to compare it to like a Mystery Science Theater movie because it's not that bad. But it's also just weird in so many ways. Like, if you're not familiar with the books, which I wasn't when I saw this for the first time, everything in this movie seems like the worst choice ever. Why do the Wheelers exist? Why is Mombi switching heads all the time? Why are the, you know, why is Dorothy being brain fried at the beginning of the film? You know, everything about this film seems like the wrong choice to make. And then you find out later it all comes from the books in some form or another. And then you're like, man, L. Frank Baum was really messed up as a human.
Yeah. So, since we've been talking for 2 hours about this movie, let's, again, for those of you who don't like Blanc podcasts, why are you listening to ours?
Yeah, you knew what you were getting into.
Let's move on to what we're talking about next week as we're going to continue the spooky season. It's also not just Halloween, but it is Day of the Dead season-ish. A few weeks early, but we're getting there. We're going to the Land of the Dead. We're going to another Pixar movie, Pixar's Coco.
Yeah, and fun fact, this will not be a rewatch for me.
Really?
I have, I somehow missed Coco. I think it came out at a time when maybe a lighthearted movie about death was not really a...
This was 2015. And...
Yeah. I'm thinking that maybe there was some stuff going on then, that this just wasn't the movie I needed to see at the time, so...
Trust
but
me,
I am looking forward to it. I've heard good things, interesting things, and it was also another bit of Disney trying to be more culturally open.
Yeah.
So, you know, we generally approve of that sort of thing on the show. So let's see how they did.
October is Hispanic Heritage Month, so this does work. So yeah. So join us next week for Pixar's Coco. And we will talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Rewatching the Magic. We invite you to keep the magic going by joining the conversation online. Find us on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic, on Twitter at Rewatch the Magic, and of course, find all new episodes at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Until next time, remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.